Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Chicago Bullseye. Bulls win game one. Bulls dominated the boards, as I predicted. 53-36 advantage overall, 20-12 on the offensive rebounding side. I said we were the better rebounding team. Great indicator for success in the playoffs. We controlled the boards. We were better defensively. But most important, we had the best player in the series. Jimmy Butler just closed it out in superstar fashion. We had only three guys, Lopez, Portis, and Butler, play well, yet we still won. That's a great sign. A great sign. I expect Wade to play much better. I expect Nico to, it's hard to play worse. Let's just put it that way. Bobby Portis yesterday, he was a 22nd pick in the 2015 NBA draft. Absolutely fantastic job in his first playoff game. But why is everybody so acting so surprised, like, you know, we just confirmed that Bigfoot exists? Portis has been showing signs for months. He shot 8 of 13, scored 19 points versus the Celtics in a victory on February 16th. He scored 22 points against a solid Utah team. He scored 20-plus against the Pelicans. All these people saying the roster is trash aren't thinking clearly. You know, as I said, Portis has been showing signs for months, and now it's starting to come to fruition. But here's the best part. Chris Paul watched that game yesterday, and you know what he said? Not only him, Paul Millsap. Every major free agent who watched that game yesterday said, I could join Dwayne Wade in Chicago next year, play with Jimmy, all these young kids rising. I think that's an option, a serious option for a lot of the major free agents, and I think this bodes well for our future. So we can all continue to complain and cry and act like there's no hope, like you know, the Wizards fan base last year acted like when they finished behind the Bulls. Or, you know, let's get on board and become worthy of this great Bulls tradition. Get on the big red train with me and start backing this team. It's the anger is ridiculous. And everyone who's listened to this podcast since 2007 knows I'm not a company man, but I do feel that this organization has been unfairly characterized and treated over the past few years as we're trying to transition from a team based around Noah and Rose and Taj to a team based around Jimmy Butler. It doesn't happen immediately. This instant gratification society thinks it just happens overnight, and it doesn't, and takes time. And we're moving towards that, and I think now we've put ourselves in position to add pieces to really, really end this horrible period where, you know, it's just basically been LeBron dominating and calling things as is. I really think the moment of LeBron's domination is almost at an end, and it will happen at the hands of Jimmy Butler and whoever Wade recruits for this destruction. So, anyhow, I hope you enjoyed this episode with basketball historian Tim Gallagher. All the best to you. Go Bulls in game two.
What's going on? This is Joakim Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got. Take your very best shot and may the best team win. The time is now. The name of the game is action. They're on the floor and they're ready to score. So let the game begin. And let's see how the ball's gonna bounce today. Welcome to NBA.
Playoffs.
Tim Gallagher, NBA basketball historian, joins the Chicago Bullseye again. Tim, it's fantastic to have you back on. How you been, brother?
I'm doing great, Fred. Spring is in the air, and the Bulls are in the playoffs.
You know, we both thought they would make the playoffs. Obviously, the path we thought would be a tad bit easier than it actually was. But here we are, ready for some playoff basketball. I'm excited. I know you are. Why don't we get right into it and talk a little bit about, you know, this upcoming series against the Boston Celtics. What say you?
Sure. Well, and just a few comments on the end of the season. As you mentioned, it was down to the wire. There hasn't been any cruise control with the Bulls this season or last, for sure. They certainly kept us on the edge of our seats. But at the beginning of the season, and you can go back to the podcast and even look at the wording as we set up the podcast online, that I predicted 45 wins. So they had 41, which isn't far off from what I expected, although it was quite a roller coaster ride to get there. And from the last podcast, we talked about the last 10 games and what they would need to do to get that last playoff spot. We both thought they'd get 7 out of 10, which they did. the 7 they won maybe weren't always aligned with what we thought, or as usual, there was some stinkers in there, but also they finally took care of business when they had to. So, and then I think just overall, kind of a quick comment on the end of the season, and I know Coach Hoiberg's gotten a lot of criticism from a lot of different people, and some of it justified, as any coach that's scrutinized by an avid fan base. But if you look at the roster from last season, they lost Pau Gasol, who's all-star, future Hall of Famer, Noah, who, again, I know some of these guys are at the, no gas left in the tank, but, a former all-star and a key centerpiece to many Bulls playoff teams. They traded Rose, traded Taj, traded Doug McDermott. So, eliminating all those guys on the roster, and Fred still managed to get those teams, get this team into the playoffs, and they don't have to play the Cavs in the first round. I mean, how can you not be happy with that?
Yeah, they added Wade, obviously. They added some good talent there. And Lopez, obviously, I think is a step up on Noah. But, and adding Rondo, obviously a good, especially later in the year, provided some good basketball for the beloved team. But overall, I mean, having to deal with that kind of roster transition is a very difficult process. You saw it even with great players. By adding great players, how Golden State started off somewhat, slow, based on their current pace, obviously. So it is a challenge, and I thought he did, at times he had a rough time. I think he struggled to find a rotation. But overall, I don't think Fred Hoiberg is a terrible coach. He's definitely not number 30 as compared to the Friends of Stan Van Gundy ESPN poll that came out recently.
Right. I agree with that. Well, the other thing I wanted to talk about was Wade. And when you look at his statistics and what he brought to the table this year, I don't think we could have expected any more. Other than he played 59 games, I was hoping for maybe something closer to 65, and obviously he had the injury toward the end of the season, which he was probably on track to play that 65-plus games. But really, what more could you have asked from him? Statistically, 18.5 points a game, 4.5 rebounds, almost 4 assists, shot 43% from the field, which is, a little lower than we'd like, but that's, he's not known as a pure shooter, an outside shooter, but I thought he had some timely baskets as well, and then played 30 minutes a game in the games he played. So I think bringing in Wade has proven to be an excellent decision, and the numbers back that up.
No, agreed. So why don't we get a little bit into this upcoming battle with the Celtics? What do you think about this matchup?
Well, again, the fact that they don't have to play Cleveland, I think, is a big plus. Boston got the number one seed, so I think they overachieved a little bit in terms of what I predicted from them this year. And Isaiah Thomas was incredible, and the fact that he's putting up the numbers he does at his size still blows my mind. And we've all talked about what an excellent coach Brad Stevens is. Danny Ainge is an excellent executive in the front office, and they have a plan. They're going to get a great draft pick because they have Brooklyn's pick. Wherever the lottery puts them, they'll get an outstanding player to add to the team. So, but that said, I think it's not an insurmountable challenge. It'll be a tough matchup for the Bulls to have, but I'm very excited that they're going to get this playoff experience. And especially for the young players, the core that hopefully they're going to build around a lot of these guys. When I'm saying those guys, I mean players like Michael Carter-Williams, Portis, Grant, Felicio, Valentine, Zipser, Cameron Payne. I don't know if all these guys are going to – well, Payne, I think, would probably be the only one that may not be dressed for some of the playoff games based on just what we've seen from the roster. But these – young core guys with players like Wade and Jimmy, and even a solid veteran like Lopez, who's got some playoff experience as well, to kind of guide them. I think win or lose, this is going to be an excellent experience to build on for the future for the Bulls. If I had to predict the series right now, I'll probably go with Boston 4-1. It would be great if the Bulls could maybe win 2. But the way I look at it is they're kind of playing with house money. No one really expected much out of the Bulls. And as we were just talking about the recap of the season, there were a lot of critics on you know, some of the other podcasts I listen to that the Bulls are a disaster. What are they doing? There's no plan. What is going on with this roster? There's no way they're going to make the playoffs. So when you heard a lot of that criticism, and I never bought into that, obviously it wasn't a great season, but again, it's winning 7 out of 10, you're in the playoffs, and for all those reasons I just mentioned, I think this is all good. The one thing I really hope to see them do, since they're kind of playing with that house money, is to really try some things differently and creative against the Celtics. And when I say that, I mean, don't let Isaiah Thomas beat you, right? Take the ball out of his hands, double team him, do some different things, right? No one's expecting the Bulls to win this series anyway. So let's really make the Celtics earn it. And you know, we've seen it against the Bulls and against a lot of other teams. And I know it's easier said than done to put the clamps on Isaiah Thomas, but let's see him double teamed. Once he crosses half court, make him give up the ball. Make Jay Crowder and Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart and those guys beat you, right? Let's see that happen rather than seeing Thomas average 35 points a game in a playoff series. Do you agree?
No, I agree completely. I did feel that Jimmy in the last game at the United Center that the Bulls played the Celtics in the game that the Bulls won, they had Jimmy go on Isaiah Thomas quite a bit, and I thought he did an excellent job defensively on him. I like that to close games in the fourth quarter using Jimmy as an option defensively on Thomas. I thought he did an excellent job. He's just as quick, and he can shut him. Maybe not just as quick, but he's close. He almost matches him in quickness, and he's much bigger. And he did a great job and was able to really, I think, affect his play quite a bit in that Q4. So I'm all aboard on being creative and finding different ways to stop him. But you know, that, to me, that's why I think the Bulls have a chance this series. I said the Bulls in six. I don't think the Celtics are. I think the Celtics are probably the worst number one seed I've seen in a long time. They're 25th in rebounding. They're a poor rebounding team. The Bulls, albeit not as good as they were when Taj was here, still a very good rebounding team for the most part. When Lopez is on the floor and Rondo's on the floor, I think they have a very good shot of beating this team. And another thing too, I don't think the Celtics are you know, going to kill you from the three-point line for the most part either. So I really like this team. I mean, I like this matchup, for example, as opposed to obviously playing Cleveland or, let's say, the Wizards.
Well, I agree with you. And I'm probably really being skeptical and as realistic as I can be on the 4-1. And I certainly think the Bulls are capable of more, although not having home court. I think they need to try some things defensively and also exploit Isaiah Thomas on the defensive end, right, through pick and rolls. And there's got to be mismatch problems. Now, again, I know all of this is much easier said than done because Isaiah Thomas has had a whole season or a couple seasons where he's been a very, very effective player and no one's really seemed to slow him down much. I do like the idea of having Jimmy on, especially late in the games. The one concern I have is that going to take some of the gas out of Jimmy's tank for the offensive end of the floor if he's worn out having to chase Isaiah Thomas around. But again, if it's managed right, I agree. You put him on in late in games, and a player of Jimmy's stature is going to get the benefit of some calls as well. The other thing the Bulls have that Boston doesn't is players with championship experience, right? Rondo's won a championship. Wade's won a couple championships, right? They've been there, and that means a lot in the playoffs. And as far as Boston goes, I mean, I'm not thinking of many players on their roster that have a lot of playoff experience. I know Horford was on some Atlanta teams, but they didn't go deep into the playoffs. Amir Johnson, I know, played on some Toronto playoff teams, but again, teams that didn't go deep. So I think that's definitely an advantage on the Bulls side as well, with the players with that kind of playoff experience. And then the other element of this, you know, the other side story is that Rondo playing against his old team. I know Rondo's played on other teams besides the Celtics, but I think most of them think of his best years, of course, were as a Celtic. So certainly some revenge factor to get back at the Celtics and seeing. I just can't wait to see those Bulls in their road red uniforms on the parquet floor. That's going to be a beautiful sight in a playoff game.
It's great. You bring up a great point, though, about the lack of experience. The Celtics haven't won a first round playoff series in, I think, 4 years. And, I mean, people are acting like this team is a you know, juggernaut or challenge to the Celtics. I don't think you can win a series first. You know what I mean? Most of these guys haven't even won a playoff series. So I think they're a long way from it. If it's not the Cleveland coming out of the East, I don't think it's going to be the Celtics. If there's a team that's going to come out, I think it could be someone else, which kind of leads us to our next one. Our next point is I want to talk a little bit about your predictions for specifically this series and the playoffs in general.
Sure. Well, I've done my brackets just like for the NCAA tournament, and not quite the drama of one and dones like we have with college basketball, but I really like the matchups. I think all of these series, for the most part, are going to be really interesting. I don't know that Portland's going to give Golden State much trouble, but all the other series, I could see going, six games or so. We talked about Boston, obviously, in the Bulls, and I do think it's an intriguing matchup, but I obviously have to go with the Celtics with home court and just the success they've had and what Brad Stevens has done there. I have the Wizards beating Atlanta, and then I have Toronto over Milwaukee, and of course Cleveland over Indiana. And Indiana and Milwaukee were probably two teams that I underestimated going into this season. I had those playoff spots going to Detroit and Charlotte, who were playoff teams last year. And you talk about being critical of coaches. What about Stan Van Gundy? What about Steve Clifford? They had teams in the playoffs last year and looked like they were on the rise, and very disappointing seasons for them. So again, when Fred's getting all this negative publicity and criticism, I think there's a lot of other places that have had more disappointing seasons, especially going from last year to this year. Anyway, back to the Eastern playoff predictions. So I've got Cleveland beating Toronto, which I think is going to be a very intense series, very physical series. And obviously we've seen the Cavs vulnerable in recent weeks, and really since the All-Star break. But I do have Cleveland coming out of that to get to the conference finals. Now, in the other part of that bracket, though, I've got the Wizards beating Boston, and then I have the Wizards beating Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals. And a couple reasons I have that. One is I think Cleveland's going to be worn down a little bit from that Toronto series because, Toronto's picked up Ibaka, and I just think, they've had some history playing Cleveland in the playoffs, and DeRozan's certainly an emerging star in the league. And then with Washington, I think their youth and athleticism is going to be a little tough for Cleveland to handle, especially coming off a series like Toronto. And with a healthy Wall and Beal, and when those guys are going, I think that's going to be a real handful to Cleveland. And the fact that the Wizards also picked up Bogdanovich from the Nets, who's a deadly outside shooter that can really spread the floor. And Brandon Jennings gives them another speed merchant off the bench, and a guy that's gotten some playoff experience over the years. Not deep into the playoffs, but he's had some good playoff series. I know early in his career with Milwaukee, so a veteran guy. So I've got Washington coming out of the East. And another reason I've got that is I'm going to go with the statistics that in the history of the league, and we talked about this on past podcasts, the same two teams have not met 3 years in a row in the playoffs in the history of the NBA. So I'm going to kind of lean toward the odds of that historical reference there, and so it's not going to be another Cleveland-Golden State final. So that's what I have for the East.
But you do have the Bulls losing to the Celtics.
I do.
And how many games would you get?
I'm going to say five games.
Okay.
I hope I'm wrong, but that's.
No, you got to come with your prediction. I'm taking the Bulls in six. I hope I'm right, and I hope you're wrong. But you've been, unfortunately, for this discussion, right more often than wrong. So we'll see where it goes. The West. What a couple great first round series coming up here, and. Really looking forward to hearing your predictions on this side.
Sure. Well, I mentioned Golden State, Portland, and we talked about it in a recent podcast that I was very confident that Portland would surpass Denver for that eighth spot, mainly because of Lillard in the column, and you saw that happen. And Lillard had that 159-point game as well. And gosh, there can't be any more underrated and underappreciated players in the league. We've talked about that before, Damian Lillard. So just really love watching him play. But Portland's not going to have enough to beat Golden State. If Jokic is healthy, I think it could get a little interesting just because of his presence in the paint. And he really seemed to come to life when he came over in the trade with Denver. But the Warriors' firepower is going to be a little bit too much, and they've been on a pretty good roll over the last couple of weeks. I've got the Clippers beating Utah, which I think is going to be an excellent matchup. Both teams had the same record. It came down to the last day of the season in terms of home court advantage. So I'm going to give a slight edge to the Clippers there for home court advantage and just the veteran players that they have and playoff experience, even though they haven't gotten deep into the playoffs, you know, conference finals or finals. But if Chris Paul and Blake Griffin are healthy, I think the Clippers come out ahead in that one. In the lower part of that bracket, I've got, I guess, a slight upset because they're a 6 seed playing the 3 seed. I've got Oklahoma City beating Houston. And Houston's probably been one of the more pleasant surprises in the season. But I'm going to go with OKC just based on playoff experience and what Westbrook's done and just how, in general, the playoffs kind of shift from a more wide-open, you know, shooting game like Mike D'Antoni in Houston plays to more of a physical half-court game. And guys like Steven Adams and Sabonis and Cantor and, you know, when things get physical and who's controlling the paint, I'm going to go with OKC as an upset in that one. And then I've got the Spurs beating Memphis, which I think that'll be a relatively easy run for San Antonio. I've got Golden State beating the Clippers. And then I have the Spurs beating OKC. And you know, hopefully we'll finally get that matchup we've been wanting to see over the last few years in the playoffs of the Warriors and the Spurs in the West. And I had to think long and hard about it, but I'm going to go with Golden State. And then Golden State and the Wizards in the finals with Golden State winning.
Wow. Great predictions. I'd like to get your MVP and Rookie of the Year selections, Tim, your most improved player, obviously, too. And then for the next show, we'll get into the topics for the next show, but I do want to hear your All-NBA in the next one.
Sure. Well, for MVP, and I really think it was an exciting race, and you could make it a case for a handful of players. I mean, I think players like LeBron and Curry, certainly in these last, you know, 3 or 4 seasons, or LeBron even longer than that, you could make a case for them being the MVP every year, kind of like when Jordan was in his prime with the Bulls. But that's typically not the way things go. The NBA looks at players that are having a special season based on team performance or individual performance or the mix of that. So it was a tough one between Westbrook and Harden and Kawhi Leonard for me. And I think Kawhi, kind of like Lillard, is still underappreciated for what he does, but that's kind of the Spurs way in terms of understated greatness. And but the fact that Tim Duncan retired, and I know obviously Tim's productivity the last couple of years wasn't at the Hall of Fame level, but still, when you lose someone like that from your franchise and from your team, and basically the Spurs once again didn't miss a beat, and that was with Gasol injured for periods of time. So love Kawhi Leonard, and he's certainly a strong consideration. Same with Harden, but I'm going to go with Westbrook as MVP. Obviously, the triple-double accomplishment is something that's incredible, and you know, it's been a long, long time since anyone's ever done it in the league. But the fact that they lose Durant, who's probably a top 2 or 3 player in the league, or certainly top 5 at worst, and they still won 47 games, they got the 6th seed, and so I'm going to go with Westbrook for that combination of Oklahoma City still being right there in the thick of the playoffs and a winning record and his triple-double averages for the season.
Great.
But who did you go with? Who did you go with for MVP?
Westbrook is it really finalized for me when he hit that 3 against Denver. I don't know if you saw that last week. It was just he's just done too much, and to average triple-double is a great accomplishment. I could also understand the argument, you know, you can't just go by the fact that he's averaging a triple-double. I mean, Oscar Robinson didn't win the MVP that year when he averaged a triple-double. But he's just, to me, you know, where would Oklahoma City be without Westbrook, I think, would be I don't think they'd make the playoffs. I don't believe they'd make the playoffs. You could probably make the similar argument for Houston. I just think you got to give it to Westbrook.
Right. And I've got Harden a close second. And if it was a co-MVP, I wouldn't have a problem with that. And a lot of it is because of the fact that Harden upped his assist numbers so dramatically, right? He's pretty much right behind Westbrook in terms of triple-double type. And most people wouldn't think of Harden as an assist man in his career. But the fact that he became a kind of a point forward and a distributor and got those assist numbers up, and the winning record that Houston had, you know, so he was certainly a close second in my mind.
Agreed. How about your rookie of the year?
Yeah, well, that was a tough one in the sense that, you know, the top lottery picks really didn't produce, right? They were either injured or just, you know, not ready or had pretty mediocre seasons. So I'll first give the rookie of the year, I thought, in the West, and then the one in the East, and then overall. So in the Western Conference, my rookie of the year was Domantas Sabonis from OKC.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he played 81 games, 66 starts, averaged 6 points, and a little over 3.5 rebounds per game. So, I mean, those aren't dramatic statistics, but what I'm looking for is here's somebody that was, I believe he was the 10th or 11th overall pick, that was a starter, basically, for a playoff team, right? And we found, and we'll talk about this more when we do our draft preview coming up, but there's not many rookies that come into the league that are rotation guys, not to mention starters on playoff teams. It just doesn't happen, right? Guys aren't ready. Or they're starters and playing, but they're on a bad team or a team that's, you know, like a Brandon Ingram with the Lakers or something, right, where they win 26 games. So the fact that Sabonis was a key contributor on a playoff team as a rookie and started most of those games, that's why I have him in the West. And in the East, I've got Malcolm Brogdon from the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah.
He played 75 games, 28 starts, 10 points a game, 4.5 assists, 3 rebounds. And, again, not a full-time starter, but, you know, certainly in the rotation and a double-figure scorer on a playoff team. So I'll go with Brogdon, and I'm going to go with Brogdon as my rookie of the year.
Great. So
not bad for a second-round pick, huh?
No, definitely not bad at all. You know, Valentine, you're right. When you look at the rookies this year, it's amazing how many guys really aren't contributing at all. You know, Dunn, been a massive disappointment for Minnesota. I think it's possible Valentine might get some consideration for second team all rookie.
Right, and I don't know that it's that he had that good of a season, but like we mentioned, there's just not many.
No,
first year guys that are doing much, and that shows you, you know, how tough it is in the league. And again, we'll talk about this more when we do our draft preview. But there, you know, there's number one, not that many spots for a guy to come in and play, and then even guys with talent, you know, to step in to the NBA and be a rotation guy or starter on a team that's in the playoffs is almost impossible, right?
Right.
You can name on one hand. If that, how many of those guys are on the 16 teams in the playoffs right now?
And, you know, obviously Joel Embiid is clearly would have been the rookie year. I think you're kind of put under the same criteria as I am. He just didn't play enough. You can't just play, you know, one-third of the season and say you're the rookie of the year. Is that your criteria?
Of course, yeah, and that's why I pointed out on the stats for Sabonis and for Brogdon that how many games they played, how many games they started, right?
That's
important. Yeah, just with Embiid, it was a little hint of what's possible, but not the body of work wasn't there.
How about, you know, to wrap this up, we're getting short on time, so let's wrap it up with your most improved player, and then I'll get into what we're going to talk about in the next show.
Sure. For in the Western Conference, the most improved player I have is Jokic from the Nuggets. And, you know, he put up some triple-doubles and almost got the Nuggets to the playoffs. You know, a very young player. And, you know, Denver can kind of keep their core of guys together. You know, maybe like a Utah, you know, they stick with the plan, keep their core together, re-sign some of their key guys, and maybe supplement with a few free agents that are veterans with some winning background. They, you know, kind of, I'm thinking of Utah picking up a Joe Johnson, a George Hill, right, which kind of, they had that young core of guys like Gobert and Rodney Hood and Gordon Hayward, and now they're 20 games over 500 in the playoffs, right? They kind of stuck with their plan, and I could see Denver on the way to that, and Jokic as a centerpiece. So he's my most improved in the West. In the East, and he was an all-star, and not a shock, but I have Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know, the Greek freak. He's helped really carry Milwaukee to the playoffs. I thought when Jabari Parker went down, they may be in some deep trouble, but Antetokounmpo, again, picked up the slack, and again, you see the things he does at his size. I think he's one of the emerging superstars in the league. So I've got him as my overall most improved player. And he was already a good player, but he made that leap that I think a lot of us were expecting, and has got Milwaukee in the playoffs.
No, I agree. I agree completely. And I saw a stat recently that he is, like, I think the first player potentially in history to be top 20 in every major statistical category. Just some amazing things that this kid is doing, and the future is bright for Milwaukee, provided they find some more shooters to surround him with.
Right, right.
Oh, goodness gracious! If he develops a three-point shot, I mean, can you imagine? Oh my gosh! If that's the one aspect of his game he needs to improve on, and if he can get that going, oh my lord, I just can't imagine.
Right, and he has good form on a shot. You know, he's a pretty solid free throw shooter, so I think that's something he can certainly add. And when he does his off-season enhancements, that'll certainly be something we'll look for from him. You know, one last quick thought on Westbrook and the MVP and the triple-double, and it's been nice to see Oscar Robertson get some recognition. And, you know me, I'm always as an historian of the game, and being old enough to have seen players like Oscar and West and Chamberlain play in person, Baylor. It's nice to see that these guys are being remembered and recognized as some of the founding fathers of the league. And the one thing with Oscar, though, is I don't think they even knew he averaged a triple-double the season he did it, right? It kind of was discovered later. So it wasn't a statistic or in the lexicon, you know, kind of really came alive when Magic Johnson came into the league. So I'm sure Oscar probably, even though it isn't his style or his, his way of going about things, but if he knew it would be such a big deal, he probably could have gotten a lot more. But he never played for statistics. He'd probably be insulted if you even hinted that when you were playing, if you knew that, you know, these barometers would mean so much, would you have, you know, tried to get that extra rebound or extra assist? He would have just said, no, I played to win, and whatever the numbers happened to be didn't matter, right, as long as I was doing what I was trying to do. And so with Westbrook, there's a little bit of, I know there was some criticism where he was kind of playing for some of those stats, you know, late in games, which some of the players from yesteryear probably would have that wouldn't have settled well with some of them.
Is that a fact that Oscar Robertson, I mean, the term the triple-double wasn't, I guess, even utilized or used or heard of at that time?
I don't think so. I'll have to research that, but I don't remember hearing about it or, you know, people really tracking it, so to speak, until Magic burst onto the scene and was putting up stats, you know, across the board like that. So that'll be something I'll have to research and see when that really came alive as a statistic.
Great.
But I know I've heard stories and discussion about it that with Oscar, I don't think it was really celebrated or made a big deal of at the time. Mm-hmm. Just that he had a great season and put up some big numbers, but it wasn't.
Yeah. Celebrated like it will be, you know, when Westbrook finishes it this year.
Right.
Hey, Tim, thanks so much for your time. For the next show, unfortunately, we got to cut it a little bit short. Due to strict restrictions on my end, but for the next show, there are some topics I definitely want to get into with you. Number one, I want to hear your all NBA team, which is especially difficult, you know, this year with team, you know, your first team, second team, and third team. The Hall of Fame class comments for Krause, and a little bit about your trip to the Final Four. So I'm really looking forward to it. And in the interim, so we'll probably, hopefully next week, obviously we'll have a lot to talk about too with the playoffs, but all the best to you, brother. Looking forward to having you on again early next week.
Okay, Fred, enjoy the playoffs. It's great that the Bulls made it. And these, I really enjoy these first round series. It's kind of like that first weekend of the NCAA tournament, right, where there are some upsets that are possible, and you know, you kind of maybe get a little deeper look at some of the teams that you haven't watched.